Blog
Greetings
Talk
and salutations.
Try that again.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is Carl from Carl's Cavern. Glad you could join us tonight. I'd like to introduce our producer for tonight, and that would be Christoph. Say hello, Christoph.
Hello. Hello, Christoph.
Are you going to do a show on Thursday?
Yes, we are going to do a show on Thursday. It's not going to be on Spike Lee, and when you listen to the show, you'll hear a quick explanation of why that changed. We did a pre-recorded show about tabletop gaming.
Okay, nice. Okay, I'll.
We do hope to return
sure
to the Spike Lee
out.
Thing at some point in the future. Yeah.
Okay.
Hopefully,
tonight, what we're going to do is we're going to be talking about one of the greatest character actors of all time. Someone who I grew up with, who I loved dearly. He passed away on January 30th, and his name is Dick Miller. And if you don't know who he is, trust me, you've seen him, no doubt.
If you don't know who he is, you know who he is.
Exactly. You know, it's that guy. They actually had a documentary on him called That Guy, Dick Miller.
That's great. That would be perfect. Couldn't have titled that better.
Yeah. But, I mean, let me put it this way. Do you want to know how many roles he was in?
How many?
His credits go to 182.
Good grief.
182, and he just finished a movie called Hanukkah. And remember I said it was 6 Walter Paisleys and 8 unofficial?
Mm-hmm.
It's 7 official Walter Paisleys and 9 unofficial. And we'll understand.
Okay,
why don't you explain
the Walter Paisley reference? Why don't you explain the Walter Paisley reference?
I'll do that in a moment.
Okay. All right.
But that's Hanukkah, which was just completed and should be out this year once post-production is done. But when I was growing up, okay, I watched Killer Theater. Now, that was in Pittsburgh, but wherever you were, you know, Cleveland had Gugliardi, you had Zachary. But you had the horror movie host.
Exactly.
In the early 60s. Who did you grow up with, Christoph?
You know, I didn't, where I grew up, we didn't have like our own little local horror movie host. However, you'll recall the existence of the VHS company Good Times Video, released a bunch of public domain stuff, a lot of genre films. One of the things they released was, I think it was a bunch of trailers, as I recall, hosted by Zachary. So that was one of my early exposures to the horror movie host thing. And now we did occasionally have like one of the independent stations locally would have like maybe a car lot would host a horror movie.
Right.
I remember seeing Hammer Films, I, Monster, which was their rendition of one of their renditions of Jekyll and Hyde. And I saw that on Channel 16 out of Little Rock, Arkansas. And it was hosted by a car dealer. Interesting. So I was aware.
Nice.
I did become aware of the horror movie host thing, and I do have an affinity for it. I wish I could remember the name of the guy at the top of my head. I read a book about him. He was in California. To my comparison, hopefully you'll get this. My comparison is he looks like the brother in Night of the Living Dead, the one with the nerd glasses and the blonde hair.
Right.
Anyway, he was out of California. I'm sorry, that's so informative.
Okay.
I know. I can't get you the name. But it's a phenomenon.
Okay.
I'm very happy. I love.
So the reason I bring that up is that's where I saw movies like It Conquered the World, not of
classic
this earth.
Monster Fair. Yeah.
You know, and all of those had this guy in it who did like a quick scene, a couple of lines, and man, you just looked at that face and you remembered that face. And that, of course, would be Dick Miller. In It Conquered the World, he played a sergeant, Not of This Earth. That was the one that really hit me, Not of This Earth, because that one, he comes to the bad guy, the alien, trying to sell a vacuum cleaner. And it's like, I don't care if you buy it or not. I just want to show it to you. Let me in and I'll show it to you. You don't want it? Fine. And I said, I like him. And the undead, he plays a leper that has two lines. And then you get into these, like, rock all nights, sorority girl, carnival rock, of which I would also see those on TV. And there he was again. Now, one of the things I didn't realize is that all these pictures were produced and most of them directed by Roger Corman, who at that time was at AIP.
Right.
Okay, and so Corman, the story was that Dick Miller was born in the Bronx, moved out to California, went to Corman and says, Corman says, well, what do you do? I write scripts. Well, I have all the scripts. I need actors. Then fine, I'm an actor. And Corman looked up and was like, you do. And
great.
So that's how he started getting these small roles. And then he would go into a TV series, did the Dragnet, he did M Squad with Lee Marvin, he did Whirly Birds, the Gale Storm Show. But then comes the movie that put him on the map, and everybody loved him. And that's where we get into Walter Paisley. And that would be
right.
A Bucket of Blood. Okay, what's your thoughts on A Bucket of Blood, Christoph?
Oh man, well that was really kind of what's the word I'm looking for here? Not paradigm, pinnacle. That was kind of the pinnacle, maybe the epitome of what Roger Corman was really. He was doing a lot, but that's what he was known for at the time. That dark sense of humor. I mean, it was a horror movie, but it was also a comedy at the same time. Same thing you did with Little Shop of Horrors, which also had Dick Miller in it. It's classic black comedy. I have a hard time imagining, like, not Dick Miller doing that movie.
Oh, no. Nobody else could have done it. And Walter Paisley, what the basic plot is he's a schmo, and he's working at this beat cafe where they do all the, you know, poetry readings and that. It's the 50s. And he wants to impress this girl. And so basically his art sucks, but he finds a dead cat and puts it in plaster. And like that impresses everyone, and everyone wants him to do more. So he starts accidentally killing people and then putting plaster on them. And really, if you look at it now, it's a real satire and a real dig at the beat generation. It's just brutal.
Oh yeah, because I mean the beat generation that was a response to the actual original beat writers was so out of touch with the beat writers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who were, I mean, yeah, they, you know, Kerouac and those guys, they had some pretensions about them, at least in a literary sense, but at the same time, they were good writers too. They were very influential on me, but I think it was kind of like you saw with the hippies. There were a lot of like really sincere hippies, and then there was like the movement that came off of it that was a bunch of pretenders, and that's what Corman was satirizing there, was the pretenders, what I think of as the beatniks as opposed to the actual beats, you know?
Exactly. And he plays it so well, and just a great role. It's the only lead role he ever had. The only lead role he ever had, but damn, everybody fell in love with him. And then a couple of, what was it, not even a year later, about a year later, they did The Little Shop of Horrors. Now, Little Shop of Horrors they were done with the picture and they decided, oh, we got 2 days, we got extra money, let's do a movie. And Charles Beaumont, who also wrote for Twilight Zone, wrote the script in a day or two. And, of course, it's about the killer plant, Audrey, and this is the original movie, not the musical. And it's just an absolute hoot. And so they had a bunch of people in it. Jonathan Hayes
young Jack Nicholson.
The lead. I was just getting to Nicholson. Nicholson played the masochistic patient at the dentist.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful.
Right.
And at this time, too, he had hooked up with Corman. But so Dick Miller has a wonderful little role as someone who orders flowers at the flower shop, carnations, and eats them.
Uh-huh.
And he literally ate the flowers on the take. That's not a fake. He just ate the flowers.
Which is
that's
just,
what
that's great.
This guy. I mean, just amazing. But you know, the thing about it is with these roles, you know, he turned into sort of like this everyman. You know, you could just, no matter how silly or how threatening or whatever the case would be, he was one of the guys you could go out and have a drink with. Seriously. And really good stuff. So after these two movies, then he would keep working with Corman. He was in The Premature Burial, did a lot of TV series. Then there's the movie called The Terror, which again, he has a smaller role in it, but that is that's a Boris Karloff film. It's also well known as being used by Peter Bogdanovich in the movie Targets, which was 5 years later. But that's a great little movie, and it was directed by like five people.
Including Nicholson.
Including Dick Miller, supposedly, actually directed.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And it's not a great movie.
No.
Oh, yeah.
It's moody, though.
But
it's got a good atmosphere.
It's got great atmosphere and great cinematography. Not a really good script.
No,
it
appears to be a rather haphazardly put together picture.
Well, it was haphazardly put together. I mean, a lot of these movies from this time period with Corman were quick, you know, get it done cheap, get it out, make money, go to the next one.
Well, yes, but you can turn out a quickie without necessarily being as slapdash and as the Terror was. I mean, look at Little Shop of Horrors. You know, it didn't rotate through five directors. Granted, it was 2 days of shooting, but it was the ultimate definition of a quickie. But it was a streamlined production.
Oh, absolutely.
At least so far
that's
as I know.
That's because you have one director,
Terror,
one writer, as
right.
opposed to all the people in the mix. That's why.
And that much turnover in the production end of things is never a good sign for a picture.
No. No, it's not. It's not. And then the next movie he did, which is a blink or you'll miss him, but then again, if you're looking for him, you'll find him, and that's X, the man with the X-ray eyes.
Oh, Ray Milland. Good.
Yeah.
Good creepy sci-fi horror film, man. The ending of that movie is just nightmarish.
Oh, absolutely. You know, if your eye offends you, pluck it out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was some good stuff there, man. That's an underappreciated picture.
That's an extremely underappreciated picture. You know who does one hell of a job in that movie?
Who?
Don Rickles.
I've forgotten he was in that. Yeah, Don Rickles is awesome.
Yeah,
Don
he's
Rickles.
The carnival barker.
Okay, yeah. He was also in Casino. He was good in that, too.
Right, and one of the, so he hooks up with Milland, and they go on these revival meetings, and that's where you see Dick Miller as a heckler. So he's in that one. It makes sense.
It's a great little role for Dick.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Then the next big one will be Wild Angels.
Wild Angels.
Oh, yeah. Well, tons
yeah.
of them. I mean, and I'm,
1966.
I'm not mentioning things like Ski Party and the Girls on the Beach. That stuff
oh,
I
well,
don't
of course. There's too much to mention here. I mean, good God.
You know, I mean,
yeah,
seriously,
Wild Angels.
Guys. If you, Wild Angels. And so, again, it's just a one quick scene. Plays an oil rigger. And Peter Fonda has the Iron Cross. Or is it Adam Rourke? I think it's Adam Rourke, actually. And he makes some sort of comment about being, you know, you guys weren't Nancy, and they basically damn near kill him. But, yeah, that's another thing. Dick Miller gets beat up a lot, by the way, during this period. A lot.
Kind of makes him Bruce Campbell of his day, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. So here's one for you. He's in the Dirty Dozen.
I was about to mention that. Yeah, he's uncredited in that.
Yeah, I know. I haven't seen that in ages, so I'd have to look.
Oh, I haven't either. He's apparently an MP at a hanging, at the, mm-hmm. the hanging scene. It's been a while since
right.
I saw that, too. And, of course, I don't know, I probably recognize him at the time, but now, retroactively, I'm not immediately thinking of him there. But that is really cool that he was in that. I mean, the guy's everywhere,
mm-hmm.
man.
Yeah. And again, another one of the last pictures before Frankenstein Unbound that Corman directed, the St. Valentine's Day Massacre. And he's one of the gangsters dressed up as a cop, and I remember that scene. By the way, there's a great
also uncredited.
Two-part retrospective on YouTube. If you just say Dick Miller, it will come up. And you can see all the scenes from the big films. Okay?
That's cool. That's very cool.
Oh, yeah. The Trip?
I was going to say that's the same year he did The Trip.
Yeah, if you ever want to see a movie about taking acid, that's one of the ones you need to see.
Well, no,
you know, Peter Fonda.
I've actually not seen that one. How accurate in his presentation of an acid trip is it?
Not really.
A lot of movies you see, and it's like, yeah, I can tell you've never had acid in your life. You have no idea what you're talking about. And then there's,
yeah.
you know, people like Panos Cosmatos is like, you know exactly what you're talking about, sir.
This is true. Not really. But I will tell you this. You haven't seen anything until you've seen Dick Miller take acid. I'm just letting
I
you know.
I may have to check that out if the opportunity presents itself. I've been aware of this movie ever since the video era. I just somehow never got around to seeing it.
Well, you know, we just did a watch of Skidoo, which also features acid trips with Jackie Gleason and Groucho Marx's head-on screw.
Wow.
This one, at least, I think, is a little
sure
more
I'm
realistic.
That. Okay, that's
you should watch
process,
it.
Dude.
Oh,
yeah,
man. How's this? How's this?
I'm thinking
Carol Channing does a strip tease. With a see-through bra.
Wow. That's weird, man. I like Carol Channing, but I'm not sure how I feel about that context.
Talk to Doc.
I really dig Carol Channing.
Because he was with us on that watch. I did that with Nick Faust. And he says that's an image that he'll never be able to burn out of his brain. And he's right.
I can understand that. I can totally understand that.
So can I.
Wow. Because Carol
then
Channing
we get into the Wild
are not too constant. Okay.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
No, I was just saying erotic and Carol Channing is not a common. That's just not a functional combination for me.
No, it
doesn't click at all.
Agree
it does not click.
Yes.
That's
and
like a binary light switch
for Frankie
on and
Avalon.
Off at the same time. Oh,
she does
wow.
this for
dude. You are causing physical blows to rack my body. I'm spasming here. I'm spasming in front of the production board, man. Oh my god.
Okay.
Dude.
I'll stop.
Next.
I swear to God.
Next.
No, just
move on.
The
I'm
Wild
not
Racers.
Down anymore with my horror. Okay, The Wild Racers, 1968.
Not a bad
yeah.
little movie. I haven't seen it in years, man. I have not seen it.
It's
in
kind
years.
Of a minor drive-in classic. I wouldn't say it's a major classic, but it's you know.
Well, the one thing I do love about it is that it has one of my favorite 60s actresses in it, and that would be Mimsy Farmer. I had a thing about Mimsy. Mimsy were the Borgos.
Fabian.
And let's... What?
I said Fabian was in it, too.
Yes, Fabian. Absolutely.
I just noticed that. That's a cast.
Yep.
And then, of course,
then
Dick Miller,
we're into the
70s. About this film.
Now we're into the 70s, and now we get into New World Pictures. Now, in 1972, my parents bought this music store in Bradford, Pennsylvania. And one of our customers, everyone has heard this story, but basically I ended up working, at a drive-in. And the drive-in was independent, but he did a lot of New World Picture stuff. And this is where Dick Miller just, you know, the hammer hit, because he was in everything. Okay? From this time, just listen to this. I'm just going to go through the movies, okay? Okay?
All right.
Night Call Nurses. The Student Teachers.
Yeah, Mr. Jensen.
The Young Nurses, Fly Me, Truck Turner, Big Bad Mama, Candy Stripe Nurses, Summer School Teachers, Capone, Death Race 2000, White Line Fever, Darktown Strutters, Crazy Mama, Hollywood Boulevard, Cannonball, Moving Violation, and Vigilante Force. Oh, don't forget Game Show Models, either in Star Hops. Okay. Corvette Summer,
mm-hmm.
too. Okay.
Yep.
Seriously. That's like, and that's not all the movies he was in. I'm just cherry picking.
Oh, I know.
20 movies in less than 7 years.
The one that really jumps out okay. of all those for me, of course, is Death Race 2000. It was an uncredited role, but it just makes my heart happy that he was involved in that. That's a Corman classic.
Oh yeah, and of course it's Paul Bartel and
mm-hmm.
my goddess Warrenoff, who I just adore.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. But yeah, I mean, I remember like the Night Call Nurses, Student Teachers. We would run these at the drive-in, and of course they're basic tits and ass movie. Let's face it, with a little bit of action, you know, that sort of thing. And who shows up in every one of them? This guy. Who is this guy? His name's Dick Miller. Oh, he's in everything. Seriously, I swear to God, there was 3 weekends in a row that he did movies, and all of them, all the major features that he was doing, had Dick Miller in them. I mean, seriously.
That's awesome.
You know, I mean, this is, you know, when he worked for you, and that's one of the things I want to bring up. Dick was very, very much loyal to the people that supported him. So he was always loyal to Corman. And then when we get a little later here, we're going to talk about Piranha and Joe Dante and how much Joe Dante loved him. But man, you know, a couple of the ones I would really recommend. Truck Turner is one. He's really good in Truck Turner. He plays a lawyer who needs to have a witness protected, and Truck Turner does it for him. He's really good in that. Capone, he's really good at in that film. Another one is White Line Fever. He's great in that film, has a good supporting role. And Cannonball Man, he plays David Carradine's second in command. And Hollywood Boulevard too, which is just wonderful. Hollywood Boulevard, he has Robbie the Robot, trying to teach Robbie the Robot to talk like Rhett Butler from Gone with the Wind. Frankly, my dear, I don't give a damn. Frankly,
wow,
my dear. Oh, and that another thing. That's one thing about Dick that we got to talk about is that he could go from drama to comedy to whatever you needed. He delivered. And so by the time we're done with this period of time, people know who he is.
Yeah.
And so Scorsese got him to do New York, New York during this time.
1977.
He has a small role, plays a club owner Bobby De Niro comes to try to get a job. It's a nice little scene. And again, we're not talking large parts, but we're talking no matter how small, you notice them. And that's the great thing about Dick Miller. You know, Corvette Summer. But then we get to the first film he ever did with Joe Dante. Pardon?
Yes. No, you're going the same way.
Okay, so we get to Piranha.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? What a great fucking movie that is. That's such a good movie that Universal was going to sue them, and Spielberg looked at film like, you're not suing them. That's too good a movie to sue over. Seriously.
Nice.
Yeah. Yeah.
The films were totally different. Completely.
They
Piranha
are totally
could have
different.
Been seen to be Piranha could have been seen to be satirizing Jaws anyway.
Yeah, but the thing is,
where satire is protected speech.
And Corman wanted to do a Jaws movie, and they came, and John Sayles came up with this idea of doing it with piranhas. So he wrote the script, and Joe Dante had been cutting trailers. And basically, if you take a look at any trailer, those movies that Dick Miller was in, Dante, you can always tell pardon me, that Dante cut the trailer if you see an exploding helicopter. If there's an exploding helicopter, it's Dante. Because he had this footage that he would insert it any trailer that he worked on, no matter what it was. If it was, there's a great, some Big Bad Mama, Dick Miller's in. And so they were working on the trailer. For a lark, he put the exploding helicopter in. And Corbett just, like, okayed it. Like, oh, it's just this helicopter. What? Wait, what? You can't have an exploding helicopter. It's like the 1930s.
That's hilarious.
Oh, yeah.
It's very Joe Dante, too. That's such a good Easter
egg. Absolutely. The other thing, too, is when they did Hollywood Boulevard, they did it basically on a bet that they couldn't produce a movie for $10,000. So they basically just took outtakes of everything and put it all together with this crazy thought. But you know what they wanted to call Hollywood Boulevard?
What?
Cheap. And they
really?
Had a poster up. Yes. Roger Corman's Cheap.
Wow. How? I struggle for an adjective.
Yeah. That's Dante. Well, Joe Dante is this crazy guy, and Dick Miller just fell in love with him. Dick Miller just, like, they took, you know, it was like steak and eggs, man, or steak and baked potatoes. They just hit it off. And so almost every Dante picture that he ever directed, you will see Dick Miller in it. Seriously. If it's directed by Joe Dante, Dick Miller's in it. No question. There's only a couple that he wasn't. And those were the Master of Horror ones. But so anyway.
Right.
So you have Piranha, and there's this great scene of Dick Miller on the phone telling people, yeah, it's you know, there's nothing to it. It's all rumor, that sort of thing. The guy comes over like, the piranhas are eating the guests.
It's just like the mayor in Jaws, same thing.
You're right. Exactly.
And you know, I was never a big fan of Jaws. I never thought Jaws was that great.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan either. I'm not a great Spielberg fan. I mean, there are a couple films I
Me
really
either.
Like, but you know, not a Spielberg fanatic.
No.
Then he has a really nice role in The Lady in Red. And a good supporting role. Yeah, Patek. Very good. And then he's the police chief in Rock and Roll High School. And of course that's directed by Alan Arkush, who co-directed Hollywood Boulevard. So he knew Alan very well and was in several of Alan's films too. And then, of course, he graduates to Spielberg in 1941. So you know the film pretty well. Why don't you talk about his role on that? Because you know what? I have to say this. I have never seen 1941.
Well, I hate to do this to you, Carl, but I haven't either.
Oh, okay. Well, never mind.
Yeah. Yeah, remember, I mean, neither one of us is Spielberg fans, and this is definitely, according to Spielberg, I never really was curious enough to dig into.
This is true.
So we have a glaring gap in our knowledge of Dick Miller here. I hate to say it, but it is the case.
Okay,
sure,
so I'm
going to
make up for that.
All right.
Oh, I'm sure. So I'm going to make up for that and talk about one of my favorite sexploitation films of all time, and that would be The Happy Hooker Goes to Hollywood.
Yeah.
Okay. So we have.
I've always heard about that movie growing up.
So this is the third in the series, and they've had Martine Beswick what's her name? Fuck. Who was the first one? Sisters, Lynn Redgrave as the first one. But in this one, it's Joey Heatherton, who I always had a thing for. And so in this one, he plays a cop who is trying to go after him. And basically, she makes a complete fool of himself and as he's trying to trap her. And he's in these underwear with love hearts all over them. You know, completely naked except for that. And it's like, it's hysterical. It's so much fun. But that's a good one. And then he has a very small blink, if you miss it, role in Used Cars. where they not they
yes.
go through a house, and he's in bed trying to sleep.
He is in
and
fact
like
credited as Man in Bed.
Yes. Yeah,
yep.
We're not talking big roles here, generally.
No.
But then they got to Howling. Oh man, what a great role.
Another Dante.
He plays Walter Paisley in this one.
Yeah.
And he plays the occult bookstore owner.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, yeah, you know, they're like flies. You can't get rid of the goddamn werewolves, man. You know, if you cut off one of their arms, they just regenerate. You know, they look dead, but 3 days later they come back. Like, awful. And he says, well, do you really believe this stuff? He says, hell no. You know, I got a business right here. I sell books. Why should I fucking believe it? It's just great. It's a great role.
I mean, he's perfect for a role like that.
Yeah. And
that was
just go ahead.
Go on. No, I was just saying that was one of two big werewolf pictures around that same time by two filmmakers who in some ways remind me of each other, Joe Dante and, of course, John Landis, who did American Werewolf in London, which also huge tongue-in-cheek.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Of course, he also
had
his Easter egg, too. A third one?
Yes, there was a third one. Not tongue-in-cheek, but very interesting. Not exactly a werewolf picture, either.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
Wolfen.
Yeah. Whitley Strieber.
Yeah, with Albert.
That was
Finney.
A weird, creepy little picture. I read the book,
I
too.
I love that.
Oh,
movie.
Albert Finney's. Albert
fucking
Finney's
love
so good.
That
oh.
Movie. Yeah.
Albert Finney kicks ass.
Yeah. That movie. Yeah, and Wolfen also has one of the great character actors in it, too, in one of his earliest roles. And that's Tom Noonan.
Okay.
We'll probably do a show about one of these days.
Okay.
So
it's been a while since I've seen
so
it.
So anyway. So The Howling, then we're going to skip a couple because who wants to talk about Smokey Bites the Dust and Heartbeeps?
But he played a factory watchman in Heartbeeps.
I know, but I hate that
he
movie.
Was a that's. Oh my God! Okay, I have to stop you here, Carl. Because I don't know if you're gonna hit this one or not. He was in White Dog. I'd forgotten that.
Oh,
he was in
White Dog.
Oh, that movie. I'm glad Criterion put that out. I never would have heard of it if they hadn't. You know, after Paramount made that movie and when they released it, they were like, "We do not want our name on this," and they released the film without Paramount's name on it. You know, they were like, "Nope, nope, nope." And it had Burl Ives was in that. And then, what was the actress's name in that? What was her name? She got in the car wreck. Christy McNichol. Yes. That is an interesting film. And I think it's not
a
racist film, but it's still.
I have a story about
still...
that movie.
Okay.
I have a story. Okay. So I was.
Dick Miller was one of the trainers in that. Yeah.
Right. Well, he basically is a separate trainer from Burl Ives. It's Burl Ives and,
right.
and Paul Winfield. And yep. He only has one quick role with it to get her to them. But
right.
So I was in New York at the time, and I was familiar with Sam Fuller, I love Shock Quarter and things like that. And I saw this thing that they're going to have the New York premiere of White Dog, built by Sam Fuller. Fuller was not there, but they had Jay Hoberman lead the screening. And I was at the premiere of that in New York City. At the
nice.
Forum.
And
I
forgot
that was
the Sam Fuller picture, too.
Yeah, I'll tell you something. That is an incredible piece of work. It really,
it's a good movie.
Really is.
A couple of its scenes smack of incredulity, but overall it's a good film. Like, in real life, that dog would have been shot after the first mangled victim. But that's fine, you know. It's a good picture, nonetheless. And Samuel Fuller, his movies are always a little larger than life anyway. That was kind of his thing. You know, there was an absurdist tone to his stuff as it was. I mean, look at Shot Quarter. There was some lunatic shit in that movie. Literally, really.
But this one was about, basically the question is racism learned or can it be unlearned?
Right.
And so they considered the movie racist. That's why Paramount took its name off of it and was released.
Right, but it wasn't racist. It was about a racially charged subject matter, but it was not a racist film at all, no. Very much the opposite. You know, Paramount's always been kind of knee-jerk as a studio. Definitely. But Paramount's always been knee-jerk. I mean, look how they handled the Friday the 13th pictures. They were making money off of it, but they were embarrassed by them.
Yeah.
You know. Okay. Oh, and Miller was in an episode of Police Squad. That's great, too. I wanted to get that in while we're at this point in his career.
Yep. And then of course we're going to skip a couple things. He's in Twilight's movie.
Yes, as Walter Paisley.
He supports his Joe Dante, and he plays the diner owner. No, he's just at the beginning. And yes, it's Walter Paisley again.
Uh huh.
Then we got to a movie that we got to talk about for me, and that's Get Crazy. Get Crazy was directed by Alan Arkus. He did Rock and Roll High School. And it's basically the last night of the Fillmore as a really, really strange night. You know, you have walking marijuana cigarettes going up. Smoking? Want to smoke? Please smoke.
Wow.
You have Malcolm McDowell doing the Mick Jagger. It's Mick Jagger. You've got Lou Reed as Bob Dylan. You've got, you know, B.B. King is in there. You know, all these people. And it's just a fucking wild movie. And it has basically been lost. Arkus has been trying to get a transfer, but cannot find a good enough print to get it transferred to B.B.
Really?
Or Blue. Yeah.
Oh, man.
And,
is it restorable? It's not restorable.
Well, they're trying, but they haven't found one that makes it restorable.
It's good enough shape to be restorable, okay.
Yeah. It is on YouTube. Not a great print, but at least you can see it.
That's the best you can do with some of these movies.
Yeah, absolutely. And you get it. He has a small role as Susie's dad. He's in one scene, but there he is. You know, he's in everything. He's just in everything. So now we get to the big one, and that would be Gremlins.
No, well, you're skipping one. It might not be a big role, but it's a big enough movie. It's worth mentioning. He was in Michael Chapman's All the Right Moves, Tom Cruise, Leah Thompson, Craig T. Nelson.
It's a good movie, but he's like he doesn't even have a speaking role in that. You just see him in the crowd.
I know, but you had to say he was there, man. That's all. That's
yeah,
good.
Yeah, okay.
You can go to Gremlins now.
Okay.
I'll let you go on.
Well, how can you not love Gremlins? And how can you not love Dick Miller in that movie?
My mother didn't love Gremlins. She was mad if she took me to see it because she didn't expect what she got. She was one of those parents. You know, they had that's horrible for a PG movie.
Yeah. Well, it's one of the movies that basically made PG-13 happen.
Yeah, this one and Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Right. But, man, let me tell you something. How can you not love him? And, of course, you know, so basically you think he's dead at the end, right? Because he gets run over by the tractor, one of the gremlins is running. But then if you listen to the end credits, you can hear a voiceover of a TV, saying that, well, they're in serious, but the Puttermans were hurt, but they're in serious but stable condition. They did that because Dante just said, if we ever do a sequel, you have to be back. I don't care how long it takes, you're back. That character has to come
back. Awesome. That's great.
And so that's what they
did. That's great.
So this is the big question. And I can usually gauge people on this. So of course, he comes back 9 years later for the sequel.
Uh-huh.
Gremlins 2. So which one do you prefer? The original Gremlins or Gremlins 2?
Man, I remember, I kind of, it's been a while for both of those, but I kind of want to say Gremlins 2. It's more fun.
I'm firmly in the Gremlins 2. I think that
great
is
movies.
One of the most absolute, wonderful pieces of anarchy I have ever seen in my life.
It's one of those rare cases where the sequel holds up.
I think it's one of the rare occasions where the sequel is better than the original.
So we can quote Carl as saying that Gremlins 2 is like Godfather 2.
Yeah. Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
Just want to make sure I got that down on paper right.
Well,
so we can
twist
your words and hold it against you later.
Yeah, please do. Well, never mind. I could tell a really bad joke, but I won't. It'll be the only thing that I can hold against me. But anyway, so that was never mind. But to me, what happened was they finally really wanted to do a sequel, and they went back to Dante, and Dante says, "I'll do a sequel, but I get final cut. And you can't bother me." Of course, they still did. But, man, let me tell you something. That thing is insane. And I tell you who as far as I'm concerned, does a great job in that, too, is John Glover. John Glover is just fantastic in that movie.
I need to watch that again. I love the fact there were two different versions of the film. There was a theatrical version,
yeah.
And there was the VHS version, because he shot a different version for the fourth wall break, depending on what medium you were watching it in.
Exactly. The one is Hulk Hogan in the theater, and the other one is John Wayne on the TV, which is very cool.
Yep, and one of them is the film being interrupted, and one of them is the VHS tape being interrupted.
Mm-hmm. So here you have, Murray Futterman, and at this point, people loved him, and he's in a number of things, but then he follows up with what I consider his best role, and I mean, granted, Walter Paisley is his most iconic one, but this is one that's not as well known. Do you know Explorers at all? Have you seen that?
Man, I loved that movie when I was a kid. I saw it in the theater. It's been a while, but I saw it in the theater. It's a good movie.
But he plays the helicopter pilot. Who?
Charlie Drake.
Who? Charlie Drake. And he thinks he sees this Tilda World thing. And he keeps looking for it in that, and he realizes, that these kids had the dream that he had years ago, but he didn't act on it. And
right.
So there's this great scene where he sees Tilda World go up, and he's just like, good job, kids, good job. And he just is so wonderful in that role, and so human. I mean, it's just a great role. A lot of people don't like that movie because of the end of it, but I think it's perfect. I think it's a perfect Joe Dante. Unfortunately, they rushed him, and he couldn't do the special effects as well as he wanted to. But there he is.
Would you realize I just now found out that was a Joe Dante movie?
You didn't know that was Joe Dante?
Somehow I've overlooked that fact my entire life.
Wow.
I did not. Very kid-friendly movie, which he didn't always do. Kind of depending on the film, I guess. He also, just to make note, he did. He was a pawn shop clerk in Terminator, which came out a year before that.
Right. Oh, I thought that was later. Oh, no, yeah.
No,
and
that's
a big 84. One. Oh, that is 84.
Yep.
That's a big one. You know, again, he has a thing with like guns. Pawn shop owner that gets killed in Terminator.
A little later, for that kind of character.
Say that again.
I said he has a great persona for that kind of character.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. He's also the armory clerk in Night of the Creeps, and he gets to have a nice scene with what's his name? The guy that stars in Night of the Creeps.
Yeah, I need to talk about this. He's in Halloween 3.
Yeah, exactly. Him.
Oh,
can't think
man.
Right,
but just keep going. I'll look his name up. I'll look his name up while you keep talking. Yeah, that was a Fred Decker movie, one of the, who also did Monster Squad.
Right, exactly.
And it had two endings. Tom Atkins.
Mm-hmm. Tom Atkins.
Yep,
thank
Tom
you.
Tom Atkins. Yeah.
Thank you.
And Night of the Creeps also had two endings.
Yes, it did. I prefer the original. Go ahead.
They're both pretty cool. Which one was the original ending? I'm disremembering which one was the original, which one was the second ending.
The dog was the one they made him put on. The original is the cemetery.
Okay. Yeah, that cemetery one's pretty cool.
I love
probably
the cemetery.
Better of the two endings. Right after Explorers, also in 85, he was in After Hours, which is one of my favorite Scorsese films, and definitely an underappreciated Scorsese film, but he was a waiter in that. And again, that's just another one of those things that just makes me happy to know that Dick Miller was in After Hours. After Hours is such a good movie. I mean, it's one of my... Oh, it's such a wonderful film. I just want to sort of hug it. Roger Ebert once told me that about... I swapped emails with Roger Ebert about the movie Ghost World, and Roger Ebert said that about Ghost World. He just wanted to hug that movie, and I feel the same way, but I feel that way about After Hours as well. I just want to give that movie a bear hug. And then also 86, same year as Night of the Creeps, he was in Chopping Mall as Walter Paisley.
Yep, and that one is a great little role because he gets electrocuted in that one. It's like, buddy, I work here.
And that was a Jim Wynorski film. I did an interview for him for my first book. And also, to bring them up again, wasn't Mary Warnoff and Paul Bartel, weren't they, didn't they cameo early in that film?
Right,
the demonstration of the robots.
Yep.
That was a good little picture. You know, Wynorski does not consider that movie a comedy. Or does not consider it a horror film. I think he considers it a comedy, not a horror film.
Yeah, well,
even
it
though
is
it
a
does
comedy.
Have the basic... it has the basic plot structure of a slasher film, but its tongue is so in cheek. You're blowing up the head of a teenage girl. Oh, yeah. Wynorski's great. Okay. All right, now we can move on from Night of the Creeps. Just making sure you don't skip the ones I want to say hi to.
Well, that's why you're here. Night of the Creeps is just one of my all-time favorite films. I fucking love that movie. Benji's. I'm a huge fan.
Fred Decker was one of the writers on the new Predator film, which is why I think the new Predator film is a lot better than it's been given credit for. And it was also co-written by Shane Black, who did Kiss Kiss Bang Bang. He wrote Lethal Weapon, and he directed The Predator. So, just... trivia.
Well, he also wrote Monster Squad and co-wrote Night of the Creeps. So, yeah.
Yes, that's why I brought it up, since we were talking about a Fred Decker film, I wanted to throw that out there. The Predator's gotten a lot of flack. and it's not fair, I don't think. But mostly fanboy reaction, I think. Anyway, yes, yay Fred Dekker, and yay for Fred Dekker for putting Dick Miller in this picture as Walt.
Yes. Again, one of his unofficial Walter Paisleys.
Yes. Just to show what an iconic
also,
role that is, was.
Well, you know, that's the thing. You know, you're an actor and you get one role and it propels you your whole career. And the thing is, a lot of actors, well, feel that they're typecast because of that. Not Dick. He absolutely just embraced that role and embraced the whole thing. You know, that's the one
that's
thing
you gotta do.
I don't think I never met him, but I understand that's there's lots of people that have met him over conferences and that sort of thing. And like he doesn't have one mean bone in his body. Greg Goodsell was talking to me about it. And he met him on several occasions. And just a wonderful man. Now to follow this up, at this point we're well into the 80s. But he has a role in the TV series of Fame.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Then you get into Interspace, another
yep.
Joe Dante.
The cab driver in that.
During the final craziness.
And then that same year, 87, if you see the TV cut or DVD version, he has an uncredited bit in Amazon Women on the Moon, John Landis. The John Landis picture.
Absolutely.
Classic.
He also made several appearances in the Star Trek thing,
mm-hmm.
both in the Next Generation and also Deep Space Nine.
Yes, he did.
But I need to go to one movie, just imagine this. Now, you know I'm a Susan Tyrell fanatic, correct?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, and several people have heard me go on about her. Well, he was in the third movie of the Angel series. Angel 3. Final chapter. And
Nick Pellegrini.
Plays this hustler by the name of Nick. And he has a scene with Susan Tyrell. And it's just like, it's gold. It's fucking gold. It's wonderful. Two of my favorite actors. And then of course, later he's got The Burbs, too, right after that.
I remember
another Joe Dante movie.
Right. He was a garbage man in that picture.
Right.
Yeah, I remember seeing the Angel movie covers. I mean, I never saw the movies. I remember seeing the Angel films, though, in VHS stores. I remember the covers. Because back in the day, I grew up kind of religious, so I avoided some stuff like that because that looked like really sexual to me. And it probably was not nearly as boundary crossing as I thought as a kid, or as I expected from the covers, you know, when I was an impressionable youngster. But no, I remember seeing those.
Well,
shows.
It's definitely R rated, but no nudity.
Well, yeah.
Very little nudity. But it's a good series. I've always liked that series. Then, of course, we talked about Gremlins 2. And then from there on in, he starts just showing up in a lot of different films that are smaller films straight to VHS and DVD.
Mm-hmm.
One of the ones I do want to mention from his later period is Evil Tunes, which was directed by Fred Olen Ray, and it's a blast. It's a fucking
Fred Olen
blast.
Ray, interesting director.
Basically, Dick Miller plays Renfield to David Carradine's, you know, Merlin.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
it's
it
a
is.
Ray
it's
picture,
cool.
So you know it's going to be an interesting outing.
And the other thing, too, is it's Evil Tunes.
Right.
So it's wonderful. A lot of it's based on, like, the Fred Avery stuff and things like that, the older animation. It's really fun. It's a fun movie. Another movie that I need to talk about from this period, again, Joe Dante. Matinee.
Yeah.
Do you know this movie?
I remember that. Yeah, John Goodman. It was, the whole thing was basically it was inspired by William Castle, the gimmick filmmaker.
Right. And it's set at the Florida Keys during the Cuban Missile Crisis. And it's such a wonderful film. And so Dick Miller plays, along with John Sayles, these two actors. You don't know they're actors who are boycotting the movie that he's bringing in, which is called Mant, which is brilliant
right.
on its own terms. And just wonderful. You learn later that they're actually hired by Woolsey, which is the Goodman character. But Matinee, I must mention this, has the greatest pun in all of movie history. I kid you not. And I love the Marx Brothers. But this one's better. You know which one I'm talking about?
No.
So it's the movie within the movie, which is Man.
Yeah.
Which is basically, you know, one of the 50s things where you know, a radioactive ant fights him and he turns into this giant ant.
Yeah.
And,
Man Monster, 50s nuclear fear film.
Yeah. Right. And that's all it is. And so his wife is there, played by Kathy Moriarty. And it's in black and white. And she says, and he's sort of like human size at this point, and he's an ant. He says, but honey, you got to remember that you're a man, and you got to forget the insect inside of you. He goes, insecticide? Where?
I might need to watch that movie again.
It's brilliant. It's brilliant. It's a,
now, refresh
it's
my memory. Was that was that Dick Miller's role? Was that Dick Miller's role? You have to refresh my memory. Is that
no,
right
that
in the
was
movie?
Not Dick Miller's role. Dick,
okay,
Dick Miller,
I didn't think so. I just want to make sure.
He was the movie within the movie. He was
okay.
One of the protesters.
Right. So long.
But it's a great role. Yeah. It's great. And then what we got here is then we talk about voiceovers. He's in Batman Mask of the Phantasm,
which is a good movie.
Chucky,
seen that.
And then basically he did the Rebel Highway series, which is both Dante and Arkish did remakes of the old Corman stuff. One is Shake, Rattle, and Roll, and the other way is Runaway Daughters. And he has, and actually, in Shake, Rattle, and Roll, he plays Officer Paisley.
Okay. This is a Shake, Rattle, and Rock.
Shake, Rattle, and Rock.
Yeah,
the
94.
94. And, yeah. And then he's in Batman, the Animated Series, Lois and Clark.
Uh-huh.
He's in, we mentioned he's in Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
And then Tales from the Crypt, Demon Knight.
Yeah, he's in Tales of the Crypt. The Second Civil War, which is a Joe Dante picture. He did that for Showtime. He's actually, that's a really good role for him. He plays this rebel rouser. And it's just a nice
role. He
was
streaming a lot of, yeah. We just stream a lot of TV stuff
here. But one more, again, the Joe Dante movie. And he plays the toy store owner, Joe, and that's Small Soldiers.
Yeah, Tommy Lee Jones picture. Yeah, that was kind of fun, as I recall.
Joe Dante
has an interesting career.
That's a very underrated film. I really like Small Soldiers. Dennis Leary is in that. Frank Langella. Ernest Borgnine.
Frank Langella is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, Ernest Borgnine is awesome, man. He's great. That's a good cast. It really is.
Oh, yeah.
The idea of the movie is great. There's so much. It's a fun movie. That's what Joe Dante does. He makes fun movies.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm not reducing him to just that, but that's a component. Sorry.
So he's also in Looney Tunes Back in Action. He plays a security guard at the beginning with Brendan Fraser. And again, I think that movie is very underrated, too. I really like that film. Nobody else seems to, but I like Looney Tunes Back in Action. So it basically broke Dante, unfortunately. Because
really?
It really fucked him over. Yeah. It's a shame.
Damn.
But I need to talk about one other film real quick. Now we're in the late, what is this, 2000s? Yeah, we're in the mid-aughts.
Yeah.
And we're getting into a lot of different portmanteau films, films with separate parts to them. And there's lots of horror anthologies, Tales from the Crypt from the 70s and so on and so forth.
Yeah.
But there's one, Trapped Ashes. Okay? It's not well known. But he plays, it's this movie studio, and he plays the movie studio guard at the beginning, the wraparound. But the story...
Is it the Dante segment?
Yeah, that is Dante's segment, is the wraparound. But guess who else is involved in this movie?
Okay. One of the directors is Sean Cunningham.
Sean Cunningham. Ken Russell.
Oh, nice.
And Monty fucking Hellman.
Wow.
And Monty Hellman's segment. Hold on. Monty Hellman's segment.
Yeah.
And it is basically a throwback to his relationship with Stanley Kubrick. And it's called Stanley's Girlfriend. And it's really
interesting.
Something. And who stars in that segment? Come on, I can think of him.
Hang on. Right there. Let's see. His segment is the...
Stanley's Girlfriend.
Wraparound. Oh, he was in the wraparound segment. Perhaps. I haven't seen the film. I'm trying to find the reference here on
John Saxon.
Okay.
Co-star.
Oh, he's great. I like John Saxon.
It's a great little movie. And the Monty Hellman segment was so good that he did an extended cut and put it out to festivals. Like a 70-minute cut. Yeah. Yeah, it's really good. And I would recommend that. And then, of course, then we have... He also has small roles in two later Dante films, The Hole, which actually is kind of fun, and Burying the X, which is really, really bad, unfortunately. And then, as I said, he just finished and completed a film called Hanukkah, which is a Jewish horror movie, and he is Rabbi Walter Paisley.
Yes.
So there we go. It is, I'll tell you something. I grew up with Dick Miller. I was a kid. I was like 6 years old when I first saw him in a film. I'm now 61. That's 55 years. Of seeing this man on film. And again, he's one of those people that you know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
No matter if there's any makeup or that, you know it's Dick Miller.
Yeah, he's that guy.
And he's that guy. And he's the original that guy. And I'll tell you something. I don't know anyone else out there, but to me, he is he's an icon. He's everything anyone would want to be if you were in film and an actor. Seriously. Always working, always appreciated, and always loved. Not only by the people you worked with, but by us, the fans.
Yep.
And so I just wanted to give this hour, or actually now it's an hour and 10 minutes, to his memory, because I love him and always will love him. As long as he is in film, he'll always be with us. Just like the old song from the Kinks, Celluloid Heroes. He's one of my celluloid heroes. And that's why we did this tonight. So, Christoph, any last comments about Dick Miller before we get off?
No, I think you summed it up eloquently.
I was actually eloquent. Scary.
I well, couldn't folks, possibly add to that.
Okay. Folks, I want to thank you all for listening. I was hoping we'd get a couple call-ins. We didn't. But, again, thank you very much for listening. I will be back on Friday. We just had someone else pass away. And that's Julie Adams, who was the lead actress in Creature of the Black Lagoon. And on Friday, we'll be doing a retrospective of her work. And I can tell you that, actually, that's going to be Saturday night, excuse me. And Mike House will be joining us for that, along with Doc. So you have a tape show for Thursday. We have that for Saturday. Doc will have a show on Sunday. And I want to thank everyone for listening and coming to the Deviant Legion. And follow us on Facebook. And folks, thank you very much for listening, and have a good night. Say good night, Christoph.
Good night, Christoph.
Nice. Good night, everyone.